Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So we're in this weird world, and you know, still, even now, there are things you go to the stores and there's nothing on the shelves. And I keep asking the questions. Like when we went to go buy a new vehicle, the number of new vehicles on the lot way down. And the salespeople will tell you, we might be able to get you one in 3-4 months because orders are backed up. Now, is that, you know, they're saying it's the chips, they're saying it's COVID. But I got to wonder how much of this is actually COVID, how much of it actually is that, and how much of it is planned, you know, planned shortages so we can jack up the price. How much is our supply chain being disrupted because, well, hey, it's good for business. It's yeah, that whole supply and demand thing. If there's not as much supply, we can beg for more and demand more. Here to share some thoughts on, well, maybe where things are, and if I'm crazy or not. I've asked our good friend Scott Paul to come talk with us. Scott is the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, AmericanManufacturing.org, their website. Scott, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, it's good to be with you. I can assure you, you are not crazy.
Because, look, I tell the story. I went looking for a new vehicle not too long ago, and yeah, everywhere we went, there was literally nothing. And they were all saying we could take orders down the road. It's all the chip shortage. There's a chip shortage. Yeah. And we've talked about it. There is a chip shortage. But how bad are these shortages?
Yeah. So there's a couple of factors, and obviously some unique circumstances, but there's also some structural issues. And I think those are the important things, because there is a policy response to those, because otherwise we'll keep getting this cycle that's this very distorted for folks like you or anybody. If you're looking for French fries or ketchup or automobiles, it's impacted a lot of folks. And here's the unfortunate thing, you know, when the pandemic started, you know, people, you know, many people were vigilant. It's like, let's get through this thing. We knew there were shortages as well. And so there was lots of talk about bolstering U.S. supply chains and making sure that we're resilient. Well, here we are, you know, 18 months into this, you know, the Delta variant has the pandemic raging again, and we still haven't made a lot of progress on the supply chain issues. We've taken some baby steps in some respects, but there are some gaping holes. So here's what's happening. In the short term, yeah, there are some problems because, like, it takes longer to offload imports from boats because of COVID restrictions. And so there are some health and safety issues, but those are, you know, those are glitches that we can work with. And then there's just that supply chain whiplash that's continued from the pandemic that hasn't kind of evened out yet. That will even out. But here's what hasn't evened out: the fact that there is a concentration of big monopolies who are key suppliers or distributors or retailers that end up distorting the market. And they are all over reliant on imports from China. Okay. And so when things do get backed up from shipping, we're stuck because we're an ocean away. And the Chinese government, if there's a shortage, they're going to look out for their own first. And despite the fact that a lot of these firms waved the flag and said, we support the essential workers, we support American workers, we want to bring some of this back, virtually none of that happened. And here's the thing, here's an unbelievable example that will come back to bite us in the butt. You know, there was such a problem getting masks and N95s at the beginning of this because we were overly dependent on imports, like 90% in some categories from China. So there were some folks who invested, who started up masks and N95 production in the United States, were able to scale up dramatically. A couple of big companies, but a lot of smaller companies as well. Well, unfortunately, the big multinationals got tariffs lifted on masks coming from China because they said there was a shortage. And what's happened is like 6,000 or 7,000 of these workers that were making this PPE in the United States have been laid off because of this. And so it's been a kind of a, you know, the folks who wanted to bet on America, many of them are ending up getting screwed because the big companies have for now won that battle, and are letting the masks come in tariff-free from China when we need that to bolster our own domestic supply.
Yeah, and this is the weird thing for me, Scott. You know, I remember going back to, you know, the heart of the pandemic when everybody was racing out to try and find the N95 masks and they were trying to find personal protective equipment for their workers and stuff. And it just wasn't there. And we were getting these cheap knockoffs, not N95, yep, but KN95s, which didn't fit, which were basically crap. And you spent a lot of money for something that wasn't what you were expecting. And of course, where we find they come from, they came from China. So I look at this as one of these moments of, we did not learn the lesson. Well, again, we've put ourselves back into a position where we're setting ourselves up for another fail.
Yeah. And I tell you what, it's an inconvenience if you can't get your French fries or you can't get your ketchup or even if you can't get the holiday gift that you want to get. But it is a matter of life and death if you can't get the medicines or the PPE or other goods that are essential to our security. And I'm thinking like here, things that will run our electrical grid in an emergency or battery capacity or things like that where we're still way too overly dependent on China and other countries for that. Now, I would say to the Biden administration's great credit, you know, I think they realize this is a problem. They signed some executive orders saying we're going to take a hard look at this. They've kept many tariffs in place on goods from China, despite howls of protest from the business community that they wanted him to be different than Trump on this. But we still need, you know, we need the procurement policies. We need that investment in U.S. manufacturing. And we need additional trade measures because right now, those folks that have, you know, started up these PPE companies, they're competing against labor in China, where, you know, it's exploited, you know, sometimes even worse than that, it's forced labor, and they're competing against companies that don't face the same environmental demands that we have in the United States, and rightfully so in the U.S. And none of that's built into the cost, so. So it's a, you know, so we have to continue to make progress on this, and we can't let those big multinational companies continue to write our laws on this because they'll just write it in their favor. And the rest of us will be left hanging out to dry
again,
particularly in times of crisis.
Yeah, again, and we won't have learned the lesson. And this is one of these moments where you go, well, you know, China won't do it to us again. Of course, Lucy's not going to pull the football away again. You know, of course, China will send us masks. And it's this, we've been playing this game with China for decades now. That, no, eventually they're going to change. Eventually they're going to adhere to the laws and the rules and the game that they've agreed to. Eventually they're going to be like us. Eventually they're going to do the right thing. No, they're not. They're never going to do it. They're going to go their way. And if it means robbing, stealing, cheating us, well, who are the idiots for continuing to do it?
Yeah. Yeah. So I would just say this way. I wish nothing more than, you know, there's about 1.4 billion people in China. About 400 million are out of poverty now. I'd like all Chinese citizens to get out of poverty. I think that's important. I'd like all Chinese citizens to experience civil rights, democratic rights, the ability to change your government, the ability to dissent. The idea that somehow selling them more product or letting our companies in there would make a difference. I mean, maybe, you know, maybe that was a bank shot 20 years ago that some people could buy, but there's absolutely no one who could buy that today. And there's a lot of evidence, Rick, that China's not headed in this direction, they're headed in the other direction, that Xi Jinping is consolidating power. He's moving them towards even more state control over the economy. And unfortunately, a lot of our multinational companies are still complicit in this. There was just a report that came out in this great publication called The Wire about China that showed that Amazon, which, you know, a ton of people shop on to get goods, the reality that not only a lot of the products are coming from China, which you figure out once you get them, but also that a lot of the sellers, a lot of the online marketplaces are based in China.
Yep.
And so it makes us so vulnerable. And the problem is Amazon is like, but we get all this cash. It's so great.
And you get cheap stuff.
Yeah, and the issue is that, there is no doubt that that happened, but there are consequences. There are lost jobs in the United States. There's an overdependence on imports from they're enabling Chinese government to continue the system of oppression, of exploitation, of violating rights. And they'll never call out China's practices, whether it's against the Uyghurs or the environment or Hong Kong or anything else. In fact, they do the opposite. They go out of their way to be supplicants. And that's a problem when our values conflict, or even worse, if we're in some sort of a strategic competition.
Yeah, our values may conflict with that, but do theirs? I mean, at the end of the day, when you look at the Amazon model, could you see them going the way of Alibaba and the way the Chinese treat their workers? I can.
Yeah, I think it, I mean, there's very few companies that have been willing to say, you know what, we're just not going to do that. We're not going to engage with the Chinese on these issues. Google did it for a while, but they kind of gave up on that, which set them apart to their credit from Apple. Netflix is not in China because it doesn't want to deal with it, while others are. Like Quentin Tarantino won't direct any movies in China because he's like, I'm not going to put up with what they want me to do and say or restrict me. But those are the exceptions to the rule. I mean, for every example I'm giving you, there are hundreds on the other side that are willing to say whatever you want, CCP.
Yeah. Well, they got John Cena to learn Chinese to make an apology.
Yeah. Yeah. I tell you what, that was like, for a guy who's like the all-American WWE dude, he turned into a chump that day. He really did.
No, but again, it comes back down to the power that they wield. So the question is how do we as this country, how do we rein this in when all of the forces, the moneyed interests are taking us in that direction?
Yeah. Well, again, part of it is having a strategy. And this is what differentiates Biden from Trump. Trump understood that there was a problem. To his credit,
we all understand there's a problem.
Yeah, you understand there's a problem. I did, but unfortunately, way too many in official Washington never acknowledged that there was a problem. He did, but the way he did it was like one of those untrained big dogs that just very flailing and knocks stuff over inside the house, even as he's trying to get some stuff done, and that was Trump's approach. So, Biden, let's do some strategic stuff. Let's do this Indo-Pacific cooperation with Australia, with the UK, with nuclear submarines and other things like that, that will expand our capacity to have a presence there. Let's also reshore critical supply chains in the United States so we're not dependent on China for material that's going to grow our future economy, whether it's photovoltaic cells or lithium-ion batteries or semiconductors, for example, to your point. But we got to speed this up. I mean, we got to speed this up. And, these companies are going to protest, and we need to make sure that those worker-centered policies that the Biden administration promised, that we're able to get those to Congress, that we're able to get those onto his desk, and that we're able to get them unmolested from these big multinational companies that are perfectly fine with the system that we have now, because they make tons of cash, but they don't at all ever consider the collateral damage from all of that.
I'm with you. I got great hope for this administration. I hope they move in the right direction. Last question I want to ask you about. There was the big story these last couple of days over this Evergrande company, where they basically strong-armed their employees to giving them loans that they went out and borrowed, took the kids' piggy bank money, went into hock themselves to help this company stay afloat and pay their bills. Evidently now they're just going to cut them off, and there doesn't seem to be any appetite in the Chinese government to help these workers. How do you see this issue, and how do you see it working out, or are these workers just screwed?
Well, I tell you what, Rick. This is they may be screwed. They may be. There's a couple of things that I think are worth noting about this. First, this is a big deal. This was happening in the United States. This is a Lehman Brothers level disintegration of a big company. Okay, and you think about what that meant for the U.S. economy. It that spun us into a disaster that took years to recover. And this potentially could happen in China like every year. And this is what happens when you have a system that is not transparent, that is controlled by the state, and that has a capital flow where it welcomes it in, but you can't get it out. Okay, and so it's a real challenge, and these workers may be totally screwed. And the other aspect of this is that there is this massive speculation that has taken place in China, and this is going to come home to roost at some point in time.
Because I was going to ask you, I mean, is their whole economy basically built on a house of cards that at some point collapses and then the globe is in chaos?
Yeah. I mean, the issue is that may happen, and it's not particularly well managed, but there's so much capital coming in, so much investment coming in from U.S. and other companies and from investors, because, you know, why wouldn't you? If the state is subsidizing the profits that you're going to make, it seems like a great deal. But ultimately, that isn't sustainable. And unfortunately, instead of making more market reforms, Xi wants to consolidate things and bring it back to state control. And so this is going to be a real struggle. It's something that we should certainly keep an eye on. But Evergrande is I think, something like a Lehman Brothers equivalent event. I don't know that it will roil the economy in China the way it roiled us, but it will not have a good effect on both the people who are directly impacted by this and then over the longer run as well.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out because they didn't have the same obstacles to helping that company that we did here. So for me, this is one of those things I wanted to get your expert opinion on as we follow it because it's, you know, who knows where this is going to take us. But Scott, I appreciate the time, the thoughts, the expertise. Keep up the great work you guys do there at the Alliance for American Manufacturing. Hope you come back again next week.
Of course. Can't wait. Thanks, Rick.
Good stuff. Our good friend Scott Paul. Make sure you check out their website, AmericanManufacturing.org. We'll get links out on social media how you can do that. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.